Hey, old man, what are you up to? This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Instant Illumination. Hey, old man, what are you up to? I tell everybody after lunch I lay down and I take a 20-minute, 30-minute nap, and then I'm ready for the rest of the day and all evening. And they say, my gosh, only little babies have to lay down and take a nap. And only old people have to lay down and take a nap. And successful people, the great minds of the world like Napoleon and like Churchill and like Edison and other great people, FDR and so forth, they all took a nap in the afternoon after lunch, and then they were ready to go for a fabulous rest of the day on into the evening, feeling just great, feeling just dynamic. And I notice that when young people are working, they're working hard, and they come in and they flop. And they flop down and they say, I'm exhausted. And they sit there or relax or take a little nap for about 10 minutes, and then they get up and they're full of spit and vinegar, ready to go on as though nothing had ever happened. Now, if an older person does that, you say, oh, you're just an old person, and you know, you've run out of your energy and stuff. If a young person does that, they say, boy, they just work hard and play hard and rest hard, and then they're back working and playing and having a good time. Well, you see, we have a tendency to judge other people. We have a tendency to judge ourselves, too. And have you ever seen a little baby? A little baby is a dynamic instrument. And the little baby goes and goes and goes and charges and just runs and plays. And I mean little baby, you know, like under 1 year old. And they are just tearing around as far as they can do it, as much as they can do, and twisting their legs and throwing their arms around and rolling and turning and depending upon whether they're able to get on their hands and feet or not at that moment. But I think they can't most of the time. But it's a start. And then they work and they play and they work so hard and they work so hard. And then all of a sudden, they're quiet. You look, they're sound asleep. And another 10 minutes later, they're wide awake again and ready to go. And maybe it's feeding time. And they say, hey, I'm ready for food now. I've had my nap. I'm ready for food. And I like to take a nap after I have my food too. It gives it time to digest and take care of. You see, we should not think of what other people think when we want to take a break, when we want to take a pause. Oftentimes here on the ranch, we have 3, 4, 5 beautiful, fabulous, powerful women built just like Trojans, you know, just fantastic beings. And we ask them to help lift great big glass tables that weigh several hundred pounds. We ask them to help move pianos and help move all sorts of awkward furniture. And each one comes in and pushes with whatever energy they have. And I'm there helping them to every degree is necessary. And when I realize that it's a little bit much for one of them, I tilt that edge a little bit away from them, and so they don't have to lift so heavy and lift so hard. And oftentimes I end up having the whole thing by myself, and everybody thinks they're helping, and everybody knows they're not. They're thinking everybody else is helping. And I just say, c'est la vie, you know. But who knows who's really exerting energy? Who knows who's really using energy and using power or just putting on a show? And I have seen so many shows in my life that I find it charming. So I don't look for the show. I just look to do it myself and do it easily. We had a guest here yesterday, and a rather imposing young fellow. And he's been one of our students for a long, long time, and he's been one of my translators for a long time in Switzerland. And I'd always call him my machine gun, because he could speak and think so fast on what I was saying before I even finished saying it, and he was saying what I was saying almost instantaneously as I was saying it, and people were just getting such a buzz off of the experience because he was going so fast and so well, and speaking German or Switzerdeutsch, whichever was called for, beautifully, just beautifully. And when we got done, he was fresh as a daisy, because he was thrilled and invigorated by what we had done. Well, now, he conducted a class, and that class was in firewalking. And the class was conducted in firewalking, and all the students came there to learn how to firewalk. And so the first thing he had to do is to take all these students and tell them, that's incorrect. That's incorrect. You're coming here to learn to walk on cool, wet moss. You're not walking on fire. And he doesn't even say you're not walking on fire. He says you're walking on cool, wet moss. So, for 12 hours or so ahead of time, they do a self-hypnosis program on themselves, saying to themselves that they're walking on cool, wet moss. And they know they're walking on cool, wet moss, and they're the creator of walking on cool, wet moss, and they see other people walking on cool, wet moss, and the beautiful, brilliant glow of the cool, wet moss is kind of stimulating. And so they know this. They know they're walking on cool, wet moss. They do not allow themselves for 1 minute to think that they're on that fire of that several thousand degree heat. They do not for 1 minute. And their feet are not, their ankles are not, their calves are not, their clothing coming down to their knees. They're not going naked across the thing, but their clothing coming down to their knees at least is not singed in the slightest. Now you see, that's a secondary feature of this. It is not singed in the slightest because their consciousness surrounded their entire body with the pure white light of love, with walking on cool, wet moss. Now, I gave the illustration of the penguins and how the penguins live in Antarctica, and they walk on ice, and they don't feel the cold. Well, and they carry the little eggs on in their pouch or their tummy, the males, and the flesh over covers the egg, and the egg sits on their toes, and they're walking, waddling along, and waiting for the egg to hatch, you know, for months. That's why they have so much blubber, you know. They need all that blubber to keep the heat in their bodies. It's amazing what nature does in those respects. Well, our friend told us that he had walked on fire 500 times. And I said, that's interesting. You're the biggest liar I ever heard in my life. You're the biggest liar I ever heard in my life. Because you say you walked on fire. You didn't walk on fire. You walked on cool, wet moss. It's cool, wet moss laying across here. Anyone could walk on that cool, wet moss. We can lay out a bed of cool, wet moss, and anyone will walk on it and not think a thing about it. The thing is, if you have a plank there, you know, a 2x4, and it's sitting on the side, and you only got the 3.5 inches of the 2x4 to walk on, and then you walk on that, and you feel a little uneasy. But now, if instead of walking on a 2x4 laying down sideways, you just walk down a line in the middle of the street, and it's a total different feeling. Because you know the rest of the street's right there. And that you can walk on that line and do perfectly well. It's all a mental attitude, a mental configuration that you have in your consciousness. Now, he said 500 times, and he said several times he was burned because he let his consciousness wander. Well, if he walked on fire 500 times, he let his consciousness wander 500 times. He had to do a re-stimulation of himself every time he wanted to walk on that cool, wet moss. He had to rebuild in his consciousness every time he did it. Now, a normal stage hypnotist or medical hypnotist or hypnotist of any kind at all will hypnotize a person and give them a post-hypnotic suggestion. And the post-hypnotic suggestion, for instance, might be, every time I pick up a cigarette, I feel yuck, you know, yuck. It doesn't, I'm not interested in that cigarette. I'm just not interested. You tell yourself this. You build that not interested in that cigarette attitude, and so every time you pick up a cigarette or a cigar or a pipe or anything at all, or even a lighter, if you wish, I wouldn't say that because you can use lighters for other things, but mm-hmm. But you pick up any type of tobacco, and you have a revulsion towards it. You have no interest in it whatsoever. Now, every time that's this, the thing that you're telling yourself. That's the idea you're putting in your consciousness, so that whenever you touch tobacco at any way, it like click, on goes a special little movie in your mind saying, yuck, who needs that? Give me a glass of water, please. A fresh water. I don't even need soda water. I don't need anything. Just a fresh glass of water. Oh, I love water. You know, and you have no interest in the tobacco. Now, when you walk on fire, you have to say, I'm walking on cool, wet moss. Train yourself to think it's cool, wet moss. Believe it's cool, wet moss. Know it's cool, wet moss. Know it. And so this is what you're telling your mind. You're hypnotizing your consciousness. You're self-hypnotizing yourself into the realization that that is cool, wet moss. In the first year of psychology class, they teach you how the mind is so powerful that you can take a cold knife right from the refrigerator and lay it on somebody's skin and tell them that that knife has just been heated red hot and it's going to burn you. And you put that on there and sizzle, you burn the person. Now that's kind of a tough thing to do, but it's a good demonstration. And it really works. It really works. Now, the same thing works in the other way. You say that's cool wet moss that you're walking on, and it's cool wet moss. Now, you program your consciousness that every time you say cool wet moss, you walk on cool, wet moss. Now, it doesn't matter. And think of this now. Try this sometime. It doesn't matter whether the cool, wet moss is laying across a lake or a river or a canyon and something like that. You can do this. You can do this. You walk across this cool, wet moss. And you do that. And every time you say that, your mind, click, turns on that special quality within you that allows you to be a magical person, to do something that it turns the tables on the physical universe that you're investing your thought in, you see? And this is true. This is very true. Now, why don't people do this? Why? They do this. But you, in your incredulity, in your non-belief, you do not want to believe David Copperfield. And so, for you, David Copperfield does strange and wonderful things, magical things, but it's not real. But for David Copperfield, it's real. If David Copperfield ever allowed himself to think that it wasn't real what he's doing, he couldn't do it. I'm telling you true. Magicians believe in their trade. They believe in what they can do. This one young fellow we spoke about the other day on Hogan's Heroes, he fixed a guy's button, and next thing you know, the guy's wallet was missing, and his watch was missing, and everything else was missing. But not only that, he took the wallet and put it in somebody else's pocket, and took the watch and put it in somebody else's head, and then he'd draw an egg out of their ear, you know, and it's a real egg, you know. And how can he do that? He says he's been away from the stage in London, and he wasn't familiar with doing it recently, but he likes to keep up his skill in doing that. I've known many magicians, and J.B., you know, Seville, Sylvia Bachman's husband is a magician. He's a magician. And he took me to several of his stage shows, and he took me to several restaurants where other magicians went, and in front of my eyes, he was performing all these magical illusions, but to him, they were real, and they were real. Just like a magician can take a tablecloth, pull it off the table, and leave all of the settings on the table just the way they were. Now, don't tell me that's something special. Oh, boy. Sure, they know what they do. Sure, there's something special going on there. They believe it. That's what's special that's going on there. They believe it. And they do it. And other people come along, they do the same thing, and everything goes asunder. You see, we are magical people. We are living in an illusionary world, a world filled with illusions. And you say, well, Herb, why don't you do these things?
More than we know.
I do them for my own enjoyment. I do not do them to put on a show for somebody else. When your consciousness is ready for you to believe in yourself, you will do these things yourself. And if you just are amused at seeing me do it, I'm just another David Copperfield in your world and another illusionist in your world. And that's what he's called, an illusionist. And you're going to believe it to the degree that you want to believe it. Uh-huh. Now, would you pay $50 to go see David Copperfield do those things? Quite likely, no. Would you pay $25? Maybe. Would you pay 10? Sure. Now, you see, how much is your belief? If your belief is $50 or $100, you know, man, you got the results. People want to take the courses of the University of Healing, and they want scholarships, and they don't want to pay for it. And they say, I haven't got any money. And we say, well, we'll work with you, but you pay. You owe this. This is forever a debt in your life to repay it. Whenever you're get, and if you follow the program, you'll be wealthy. If you follow the program, you'll have all the abundance you want. But the thing is, if you think you're getting it for nothing, how much are you investing in the program? How much are you investing in your training as David Copperfield? What sort of a David Copperfield Jr. would you be? Or what sort of a non-David Copperfield would you be, where people look at you and they think to yourselves, well, we were on board the Amsterdam, and this was a cruise liner going down to Mexico. And as Ellen and I watched this show, this young man was supposed to be so good, so fantastic. He was average, and maybe a little less than average. And the reason he was average was that he thought he was so damn good, he didn't have to play the game. He was putting on the show once or twice a day, or maybe at least every day on board ship. And as he was doing this, he took the la-di-da attitude about it. Instead of doing it. Now, his wife, gorgeous woman, dressed in pure tights from head to toe, skin-colored tights, very startling woman. She took, like, window drapes, you know, like curtains that were hanging from the ceiling, one long curtain going up over a loop and coming down, and she rolled herself up in this and slid up to the ceiling and came down and whoop, rolled it down and then caught herself just at the right time. She was really an illusionist. She, and beautifully done. Beautifully, right. Wonderfully done, and magically done. Now you see, that is magic. That is, what would you say, a genius at work. And that turned us all on and made us wonder. Now, but this fellow, and we saw him a second time, and he was worse. He put a dog in a ringer because the dog got all wet and so forth, and so he had to wring out this little poodle. And so he put him in a ringer, and he held up this flattened out coat that a dog had, which was nothing in there. But he didn't reproduce the dog.
Yeah.
He didn't bring the dog back. We all were sitting there waiting for that dog to come back.
Yeah.
Now, where is the dog?
Uh-huh.
Where? And of course, the dog didn't go through the ringer.
No.
Something else. Why? It's just something that went through there. But where is that dog? We wanted to see that dog. Yeah. And that was part of his show.
Yes.
And he didn't show it to us. But you see, when you're David Copperfield, you've been there, done that. And you know what sort of things people need to have. They need to have a show that's got a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have an end, if you don't have the conclusion to what you had in the beginning, then you have no show.
Mm-hmm.
You have no show at all. The penguin, whose wife lays a big egg, and in that egg is the little penguin, and she goes off to the sea to get food, and then he is sitting there with this big egg in his tummy, and he's holding it on his tummy, on his feet, and we're waiting for that egg to hatch. And when that egg finally hatched, and we saw the egg hatched, it was glorious. And of course, the little guy turned out to be a real trooper. What was the name of that show? Dancing Feet or something like that. And it's just a charming penguin show. But that's one. But there are others, too, where the penguins were actual live penguins that they had studied and showed the picture of. So, you'd like to walk on water. You'd like to walk on fire. You'd like to walk on air. You'd like to do lots of things. And I say, bull roar, you don't want to do any of those things. Because if you start saying, I now walk anywhere I choose. I walk over the sea, I walk through the sky, I walk anywhere I choose, and I am limitless. You see, then you're limitless.
Uh-huh.
But if you say you walk on the water, then you're like Peter, you have that possibility of looking down and sinking. And if you say that you're going to walk in the sky, my goodness, people say you are strange indeed. Well, do you want to be seen?
Not necessarily.
Yes, you do. The reason that you want to be seen is because you want to walk through the air. Now, you don't know it, but every single moment of your life, you are teleporting yourself mentally from one place to another. You are in Europe. You are in Switzerland. You're visiting your grandchildren. You're visiting your sister, your sister-in-law, your brothers. You're visiting your family. You're visiting people. Boom, you're there. Boom, you're back. Boom, you're there. Boom, you're back. And you're doing all the same, but you haven't learned how to reset your universal time clock so that you can casually make the journey. Would it be interesting to take a trip from here to there and be aware of yourself floating along through the heavens, looking down at the houses and the people, and maybe stopping for a cup of coffee here or there? You know, wouldn't that be something?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be something? As fast or as slow as you want to go, and no need for any coats or warm clothes or cool clothes or whatever, because you're untouched by temperature. Mm. But you see, you're doing it all the time.
Yeah.
And you don't want to admit it. And the day you are a David Copperfield and you believe in what you do, you have to believe it. Then you will do it consciously. Because you're already doing it unconsciously. Have a wonderful day, and remember that it's all your own game, whatever you want to play. I love you. I love you. I love you.
Love you.
In every way.